Mary called and can't make it to them. She called me actually about 5 days ago. She has a conference, another meeting that she didn't realize was scheduled. So she apologized. Should have known that I knew it again. I'll entertain a motion to approve the minutes.
So
move.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, so speaking of Jim, we are
actually, not too much to report. Figuring out how we want to approach the towns and so forth. So that's sort of the number we're going to see.
Okay.
It's been pretty quiet, which is good. The next big thing to keep on your radar is the bids will be going out for the final schools. And that will go out in the June time frame. Maybe open probably in July. And the way I want to do the bidding, I think the best way for the agency is to bid the final disposal. For those of you who don't know, at the end of the year, the section of contracts is up. And the last time we renewed the trucking contracts, and they've expired at the same time. It just makes sense. So what I want to do is I want to go up to bid in June. Into July for the final disposal, pick the top 5 or 6 places, and then go out to pick for a trucking, have a trucking go to the first place, and then what we can do eventually that goes up, and so the final disposal in one location maybe, the typically maybe a little higher, the trucking may be lower,
right.
So it might, but putting what you had to do together might make the most sense to the agency, or vice versa, the trucking may be higher, the typically may be lower. And so what we want to do is do the final disposal in June, July, do the trucking in July, August time frame. And I spoke with the chairman. He wants to approve the contracts in the September board meeting, which would make sense because we usually like to finalize our budget. We do it every year in October. We've been the legislature and the county executive's office, the draft budget in August, looking for comments August, September. If we don't get anything by the September meeting, then we usually have to finalize the agency's budget in October. So you can prove this in September. So this could swing either way.
Yeah.
A big swing to that. You know, 52 or 54% of our budget is just a campaign. So that's a huge chunk of money right there. So we want to make sure we get that in before, because I don't want to wait too long either. I don't have to go back and buy a whole number of final budget in November or something like that either. So but those are things just on your item.
Will you have a lot of landfills bid for it? Or?
I hope. I think I'm going to fingers crossed.
How many are around that would do it?
Well, you have a couple of waste energy plants. You've got Hudson Falls. You've got one in Peekskill. Now, whether these people are going to bid it out or not.
They're not dumps. Dumps.
No, that's their waste energy plant. We can go there, too. Of course, Seneca Meadows are already taken down. We've got Colony. We have Ontario, which is a little further than Seneca Meadows. We have Chemung.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a couple of different places. And I'm hoping to get half a dozen.
Sure.
I've already been contacted by several of the large companies because they're aware that the Seneca Meadows is coming up. So, as a matter of fact, I had one of the large companies in my office last week, the president of the company. How we're going to do the bidding and when we're going to go out and so forth. So I go up to Northern America, you know, we're going to call as many people as we can get a hold of them, see how many can bid, we'll bid on it.
And how long will the contract be for?
Right now we're anticipating 5 years.
Okay.
Are you able to do the combination of disposal and transportation so we truly get the lowest cost?
Sometimes one bid. We can do that. The only thing is you lose control of where it's going to end up. And I don't want to lose that. There has been some people that do that. So you're not even looking at the final disposal. Where it ends up, who knows? What you're doing is you're going out and bid for the trucking. And then you're relying on the trucking companies to make their deal, whatever deal they're going to make with the final disposal. a little leery of that, of doing it that way. I'd rather have the control of where it's going to be sent.
Going to put a side of the throughway.
ultimately, it's going to be the county's responsibility, and we'll go where it ends up if it's not ending up in the right spot, because I won't know where it's going.
And why can't it be something different? We are contracting with the disposal site and asking them to provide treatment.
Well, then you could do it the other way around. Now, the only problem with that is I have to make sure that those trucks are on site, so we do our own vetting of the companies, of the trucking companies. If I get some trucking company that's not, that doesn't work for us, I'm in violation every day. I could be. Because if we order 12 trucks in anticipation for tomorrow, and all of a sudden I only get 11 trucks, and I've got trash in the floor, I get right up and I get fined. I have to that building every day. And right now I have a working mission with our current trucking company. If I can get on the phone and say, look, we ordered 12 trucks, you only give me 11, I need another one. Well, they'll divert trucks over to us immediately. You know, those sort of things. It's a lot of operational issues.
But from an environmental point of view, as is currently situation, I know you're familiar with it. If you're just taking landfill disposal bids, the closest landfill, which would be the least trucking cost in Albany, would not be able to compete with the furthest landfill in actual tipping fee. And so, because they've been more expensive.
I want to know that
a little
I think that Tim, before you came in, had talked about how he's going to do the bidding. He's going to bid out final disposal first, pick the top five or so sites, and then bid out trucking to each one of those sites, so they can see how the trucking and the disposal are gonna eke out.
So then the question would be, can you legally mix and match to get the lowest price?
Yes. With the controller's office. As long as we justify it. It's not close to the Board of Corrections.
Transfer station.
If we were to go with the cheapest tipping fee and the cheapest trucking, it may not work out. Because we may end up getting a tipping fee of $20 a ton in Buffalo. We may end up with a $20 a ton in Buffalo, and if it's only $18 a ton to ship it there, we still got to look at the mileage and so forth, and how much fuel we're going to be supplying. The best way to do it, in my opinion, is you pick out you get the top six, top five or six, final disposal indication, right? You rank, you see what the cheapest was, the most expensive, you look at fuel, because right now we're doing 4.5 miles per gallon on the diesel that we supply with fuel. So we're going to be looking at that, and then you go to bid, so you're talking, and you say, give us a price going to A, B, C, D, and E, and they're going to give us a price on going to all these on a per ton rate. And then what I can do is I can match up, and it may work out where it may not necessarily be the cheapest tipping fee to go to column A or wherever it is, but the trucking may be so low that that might be the best spot to go when you match them both up.
But it's half the distance.
It's half the distance. It's less than that by a third. There is a difference. And believe me, and this is no secret, but I'm going to say, when the bids go out, I'm going to say right now, that's one of the things the landfill will look at. They're going to look at location and distance, because they know for sure they're going to be looking at trucking. So I know that some landfill out in Buffalo may bid $22 a ton or $25 a ton. And Colony, knowing very well how close they are, they may bid $35 a ton. I don't know. These guys aren't, you know, these guys know what they want. They're going to be looking at that, and I know they are. But I got to match up with
trucking. The trash business corrupt? Come on.
Is there any other questions? Good manners.
Yeah, I think that's all well and good. I just wonder if any progress. We talked a little bit about options for the town, and I don't know what kind of feedback you've gotten or where you might be in, because if I recall, that had to do with, you know, future purchases of equipment or repairs of equipment. And so I just wonder if there's any update on that.
I know we're going to be meeting again. There has been some proposals that have been thrown out there, not to the towns yet, but internally in the executive session. And we're going to be going to the executive session again at the end of May. So we're going to move it again. There are some general things that were thrown out there. I don't really want to get into detail of them because these were discussed in an executive session, but I can tell you this, probably our next board meeting is on Memorial Day, so it's a day after Memorial Day. Probably within a few days after that board meeting, a proposal will be sent out. I anticipate. That's what they have in that board meeting. But right now, in terms of the ball's really in their court. You know, the only thing we can do is just, I have to be able to balance that side of the business and make sure they're not losing money. And we worry about the numbers, and we're already losing money on that side of the business. There's no question about it.
And the wife's test to go to you, but they don't have to use you for hauling. Or equipment.
Or the recycling.
Or
I mean, yeah, they could essentially say, you know, we're not interested in the ODR, right? We're going to do it. County waste, waste management.
But they still have to come. The waste itself would have to come.
The MSW, that's correct. The MSW would have to come to us.
Yeah.
But when the company would bid on it, on the hauling, they look at the recycling and say, you know, we want to keep the recycling, so we're going to lower the transportation costs of the MSW. There's a whole, or the other thing too, is they could do like the Newport says. And New Paul's put their own roll-off truck with their own boxes. And they can haul their own.
Kingston does it too, right?
Kingston does have their own roll-off boxes, but believe it or not, we pick up the roll-off boxes from the transfer station.
But their trucks, they go to each house? They don't just go to the...
Well, yeah, they bring a truck to the...
They bring a truck to the truck. Yeah,
a packer truck. Yes. Right, right.
Yeah, the garbage packers, they come in all kinds of...
Right.
They also have a transfer station, too.
I wasn't clear.
But yeah, all the packers come to us, exactly. Right now, the only ones that self-haul are New Paltz and City of Kingston. And New Paltz only self-hauls the MSW. The recycling, they don't haul that. They don't want to drive up to Kingston. So we would pick that up for a cold charge. But we have done an extensive financial analysis on that side of the business. And it really breaks down to three things. It really breaks down to your tipping fee. Which that tipping fee covers the employee costs, it covers the excavators and the loaders inside the business. It breaks down to actual hauling, so the employees aren't going to have to pick up the fuel, the wear and tear on the equipment, the roll-off trucks and boxes and all that. And the third thing is, and then this is the part right of the capital, the capital investment.
Yep.
So those are really the three things that you have to do some investment in there. And, because everything is really, really falling apart. And, you know, it's one of those things. We've had a 20-year contract that's extended from year to year in the past couple of years. But that 20-year contract was for both parties. It was for us to service them. We get in the way. And we've held up our side. The town has held up their side now. Now you're in this crossroads. And if you want to continue the service, why not? And that's really where we are. So.
Last question for me. If you do a 5-year contract with a landfill, does that mean is there a clause, an escape clause, after 1 or 2 years, if the new technology comes open, if we decide to do a regional dump, are we out or are we fixed for 5 years?
We can work in any one of those different ways. The only thing is the more out you put in a contract, the higher the tipping fees.
Okay.
Well, because they have to protect themselves. But in the current contract, though, there was an interesting thing there, and you just mentioned about the regional thing. In our current contract, there is an out in there that if we make a deal with any other municipality, any other, we're not a municipality, but any municipal form of government, if we do a dump or, yeah, or something like if Sullivan opened up another cell on their landfill that's closed now, but if they would open, we can make some arrangement with them to do like an intermunicipal agreement. There's an out there for our tonnages. So, and I'm going to go back and review that contract and keep some of those things in because we want those things in there, those outs.
Yeah, well, I think in my conversations with different legislators, flow control was not meant to just bring a garbage 400 miles away. It was to have a regional. You know, people aren't going to support flow control doing what's going on today if it's still going on in 2 or 3 or 4 years. It was a support of regional dump, you know, let's right. Ulster and Duchess and Columbia and Green and work and try to get
on the
because.
And in my opinion, I think everyone here knows me well enough. I try to walk this line. I stay out of
I'm not
I'm an administrator.
No, but I mean,
you guys got it in the board of directors.
Because you know what, the flow control could change you if we didn't do it. Yeah. Necessarily as much as you don't like this.
But I can say, though, in my opinion, a regional thing is the way to go.
I think.
And I'll tell all that. But that's about the cross street.
No.
I think it's like located in this region and we get the dollars.
Hey, Delaware County said it's done. Only Delaware County garbage goes
for
it. So I'm here. They want
to
take money from you.
You don't have to.
Yeah. They have a 1% sales tax to pay for the bonds.
Really?
Yep. That's my understanding. It's 1%.
No, you're right.
Is it 1% sales tax? Yep. Pay for the bonding. That's investing in your... They're not sending 20 trucks a day, 400 or 500 miles, burning 600,000 fuel over there, down with the fuel.
You know what's funny is they had the exact opposite problem we have. If the money needs to be flipped, we're flow control, we're chasing haulers, and of course it's not that bad, we only want two that are an issue, but we're chasing haulers that are leaving the camp. We're trying to keep them in, they're trying to keep them out.
Right.
Because there's a zero tipping fee. With the zero tipping fee, they're constantly watching and calling us, and the people are coming into the county because it costs money. So they're seeking garbage in, and they're trying to get it. So I've had conversations with the director up there, and said, yeah, we're trying to keep people out. We're trying to keep people in, and we're trying to keep people out of them. This is all supposed to be for Delaware.
Right, right. Right.
And we're trying to take garbage in.
Certainly, it was set up many years ago, but it seems to be that it was done right.
Yeah. The only one who's taking it that way.
So that's the check, too.
It's, yeah. I'd be curious, like we took that other field trip, I'd be curious to see their facility and talk to them.
I'm not a board supervisor,
and
I sit right next to them.
Yeah. They also have the only composting MSW facility.
Really?
They actually have a piece of equipment, a long tube, it's made in Canada, actually it's Canadian built, but they put the MSW on one end and it goes through a heating process, and then when it comes down the other end, it comes out of a tractor.
Really?
For the MSW. Yeah.
And you know, if they do a 1% sales tax and they have zero tipping, you could do no extra sales tax and do $10 tip or whatever, you know, and it's all...
Especially,
yeah. If you want to set it up, you know, you listen to them on the job here. I know Sue McIntyre runs the place.
I don't know her. I just like Jim, the chairman of the support supervisors.
I can give Sue a call if you
want. I personally would be very interested, I think, looking into
I feel very strongly the same way about the limitations of the current MOF and that we should be able to process single stream in the county if it's going to be collected. And I know that's another major investment, but I think it's an investment in infrastructure that's going to pay off. That's a guess. But I think it's really important to do a cost-benefit analysis.
I think everybody agrees with you on that, on the board. I'm speaking for the board now. Okay. I think they agree. However, finding the money to do that is the next big problem.
Yeah. Well, we had a cost-benefit analysis done at a engineering firm about 2 years ago.
Yeah.
2 years ago.
Yeah.
And their conclusion was not to invest in it. They said, and I can tell you, and they said because there was no flow control, because you can't guarantee the recycling coming there, you're throwing your hands up. Now it's even worse because if they were doing it now, they would be pushing even further to say no, I can tell you. And the reason is because the companies are keeping more and more of the recycling. So if they're going to do that and you build a facility, and we're not in the collection business, so we don't collect it, we can't bring it in, we just cross the fingers and hope it comes in.
But I think a cost benefit analysis would have to look at it both ways. I mean, that's something I always wanted to see. I know I spoke to Charlie about a cost-benefit analysis, not specifically a depth grade of the MRF, but it would involve it. Us processing single stream with flow control of regulated recyclables. Of course, the minute I mentioned that, all the towns took that as flow control of recyclables, not regulated recyclables, and people were talking about scrap metal and all this, and we had all these people coming and dropping and standing the feet, exactly. Yeah. But I know, and speaking back to what Rich said, when I supported flow control, just as one legislator's perspective, it was always with the idea that it was one piece of the puzzle of the whole waste management in the county, and even at the time I advocated for flow control of recyclables, looking toward siting out landfill, whether in this county or regionally. I think all those things, they're very big things to tackle, but I think they all have to be looked at. And a cost-benefit analysis of upgrading a single street to a single street MRF needs to show how that would differ with or without flow control of regulated recyclables.
If you have flow control of recyclables, it would turn it around.
Yeah.
Going into your questions, I think it would turn around.
It would.
And
what we
had to remember
and we saw what it was doing.
Yeah. Now, the one thing I will warn them, there's a lot of discussion with my counterparts, is the single stream. There's a lot of discussion now going back to dual. And there are some plants that have now abandoned single stream and just now going back to dual.
Can I get this much information?
Yeah, doesn't the paper end up ruining?
Yeah.
With single stream?
It's an unbelievable percentage of the recycling that ends up in landfills anyway.
Right.
Because what happens is the glass gets broken, it gets ground into the paper. And if all the paper mills are just rejecting it, all the stuff's ending up in landfills anyway. So I know that there's a movement. I'm going to be at a conference Sunday through Wednesday this week up at Lake Georgia, I go to every year, and a lot of this is going to be discussed. But I know just through my counterparts throughout the state, you know, and speaking with DEC, they're seeing it starting to, I don't even know, fail. But it's becoming more and more of an issue where they, which is good for us, but we have a dual stream plant, and we don't process a lot of the stuff that we do process is worth a lot more.
Okay.
The commodity book is pure. It's much more pure than the single stream. So that's another thing that we really want to look at and see what the industry is now. So the industry is going to start checking back. And again, flow control, but the dual stream.
Right.
That would be another dynamic.
I think that would be one piece of the puzzle in terms of an analysis of a full cost benefit analysis, looking at all the different options, because obviously flow control of regulated recyclables would, the county would dictate the terms,
right.
You know, so, Ken.
One of my concerns on flow control for recyclables the entire time has been, I think that if we go to flow control of regulated recyclables, then that is going to hurt the ratepayer at the curb a lot more than when we did flow control of MSW, because while you're not charging for it, you're depriving the company of a income stream. So then they're going to, in my opinion, they would then increase their rates exponentially to that flow control because they were already being charged to tip. For the MSW, it was just the amount that went up, but with recyclables taking away an income stream from the company, and they're not going to just take the hit and walk away, they'll just increase their prices.
Yeah.
So that's a concern of mine for, you know, for that. My idea back when we were talking about this was to take all of our recyclables in at the transfer station single stream and then sell them to one of the companies that was doing single stream.
That's what we're doing now.
That's what you're doing now, you're just...
Not single at the transfer station.
Transfer station, but we get single stream in our facility a lot. And we have a separate part of the market
right.
Use for dumping.
Yeah.
And what we do is, because you'll see when the single stream prices go down, we get a deluge of single stream into the facility. Right. It doesn't cost anything.
Right.
But what they're doing is they're staying back and they're looking at how much fuel is it. Do I really have to run up to Catskill? Do I really have to run down to Newburgh? This is how much it costs us. You know what? We're making $12 a ton of a single stream. It's not worth anything. What's the point? Just pump it at the RRA. It doesn't cost us anything.
Do you guys wait for the price to go back up and then send it out?
Well, we do it. We're watching it. We only have so much floor space.
Right.
So we're watching it. And we're loading on the track. So if we can get rid of $15 a ton, we're not making a little bit of money. We're not making a lot. But as soon as the single stream prices go up, then it starts to dry up. and the facility, right. So it's actually a lot of
base. I mean, honestly, I think that single stream would increase recycling at the transfer stations. And then...
You think the throwing...
I don't know. A lot of people have a problem with the separating. I
think the ideal thing is a paper stream and a commingled stream, because then you avoid the problem of the glass and the spaghetti sauce on the paper, and yet it's not as complicated as it was when the newspaper had to go here and the cardboard there and the office paper there and three different colors of glass. And
The glass is relatively worthless on the market, isn't it?
Yes. Glass is difficult to get rid of. It's very difficult.
Can we check in on the
Well, first, I just remember the comment that in 1977, the Ontario Ministry of the Environment decided to embark on the experiment of single stream, and they committed to a 10-year project in the Ontario Center for Resource Recovery, after which they abandoned it because there was glass in the paper and they couldn't get the paper mills to accept it. It seems like the whole thing is just coming in full circle back to the same thing again. And if that's the case, and we're anticipating that that is going to occur, then there are a couple of questions that sort of maybe make some sense to be addressing. The first is, Tim, I remember you saying that the current facility does not have enough capacity to handle all the recyclables in the tenant.
That's probably true. I don't have any numbers to back that up, but if I were to take a good guess, I think that would be an
okay. So if we did go back to dual stream and the recyclables were, let's say, leaking elsewhere from some of the haulers, that might not prevent you from still being economically viable with the current operation, without having to make a lot of improvements in the way that I'm thinking, but just bring it out for discussion.
That's possible. I hesitate because I hate not going out having the numbers in front of me.
Right. We're dealing in the realm of possibilities versus should we invest, shouldn't we invest.
Right.
So,
if you were doing a detailed engineering study, And the way you could do that easily is you have to do an annual report.
Right.
And within that annual report, I have to know what all the recycling is being generated in the county. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not coming to us. The haulers have to report it to us. So by using all that information, and assuming it's relatively accurate, which you know, have to be 100% accurate, if you use that relatively accurate, you can look at our facility, and we're permitted for 80 tons a day. You know, if we're 90 tons a day, or if we're around 80 tons, we can still process it. I don't know what that number would be. I'd have to go back and look at the exact what's being generated in the county. But you know, if you were to keep it a dual stream, you know, we would just run that. We might run two shifts. We might have enough. The facility may have to be modified.
This is the question of do you have to manage everything, or can you just manage enough to keep yourself going so you can do your part in the project that can do their part? Those that want to. I mean, there is an added burden in having to transport different streams of paper and commingled and all that other thing, and maybe that the economics work for them to drop it off at the current point. So the question I'm building up to is, what would it do for you, and what are the consequences, just for discussion reasons, of the county requiring that to be dual stream rather than single stream, and being ahead of the curve, recognizing this is becoming an issue, and just saying, okay, we want to take charge of this and prevent all this paper that's mixed with glass from going into the landfills and make it into true recycling, so we're going to go dual stream, knowing it's also going to happen anyway. And then in that way, we make your existing facility vibrant again.
And to further support that point, I just want to throw this out there. You know, Westchester just retrofitted their MRF, and they made a very conscious decision after much studies that they were going to stay dual screen. They decided not to go. They're investing a ton of money in this, and Westchester was looking forward, and they decided that it was in their best interest to stay dual screen and not to convert over.
So it seems to me like maybe some kind of analysis to point out the implications of the county enacting a dual stream requirement on recycling streams and pointing to its impact on the RRA might be called for, and the question would be who would do it and how would it get done.
Are you saying enacting that without regulating, without having flow control of regulated recyclables, but
yes,
requiring that who's ever picking up trash and recyclables in the county have a dual stream process?
Yes, and the reasoning being that despite the source separation that's being done by residents, the paper's hanging up in the landfills.
Yeah. It's interesting.
Yeah, I want to that MRF that was upgrading the MRF, it was based on thinking that once you were at single stream, it would be hard to go back to dual, but it's a trend in that direction. It certainly improves the quality of the recycling. And then ultimately, there's always the residual, the garbage, but in the next decade or the term of next solid waste plan, DEC is really pushing for more composting, and there are places that do composting at curbside, especially for large generators. So ultimately, even if you go to dual stream, it's going to be also, in many countries in Europe, I think they do wet and dry collection, the compost is the wet, and that's the material, certainly from the larger generators, but ultimately, it is done at curbside as well, so those are all going to have to be factored into the next 20-year plan, but I'm really glad to hear that there is a push towards dual stream, because sorting clean, separated recyclables, if they're all bottles, cans, or plastic, and then the other is different kinds of paper, that's a lot different than trying to, I oppose single stream to begin with, but the ballers and the city seem to feel that it was going to save them.
It's cheaper to move one truck instead of two or three.
Yeah, but the other alternative is make those that want to do single stream take it to a destination that accepts it, and that we only accept dual stream, and that we can handle. So that's an alternative. But
wants
to be continued.
I think there's a lot of great discussion. I think we do need to continue to talk about it.
He's chewing it.
And when we're not the RRA, they should tell every pizza place how much they should charge for pizza.
Yeah.
Every gas station, how much they charge for gas. Every hamburger joint, how much they can charge for hamburgers. Well, sir, for government's in business to tell everybody how much they're going to charge you and make you do stuff, we might as well do it for everybody.
Technically, we're not.
Yeah, on that note.
Okay.
But then
you want
to
have to
get a hamburger.
Thank you.
Just
to bring
it. Do you want to go ahead and contact
Sylvester down there? Yes, I would very much.
Word of mine.
Yeah, let him know. Maybe we can do a joint trip with the board if the board's interested in doing it as well.
No,
I think so as well.
I think your committee would really appreciate seeing what's going on up there.
I'd also like to extend that invite to more legislators, not just on the committee, because I think it would be good for other people to see what a modern-day successful landfill and facility looks like, because people have a sort of image in their mind that doesn't necessarily match up with what's going on up there. So I think we should do that as well. I agree.
And that town close to convention.
Oh, they all carry the same price?
And
they're an anti-trust policy with them?
Yeah. In DOT applications, so on roadside, if they're going to see me, they can't use it for that consumption.
Right.
But they can't use it for that.
Okay, thank you very much, Chairman. Thank you, Sharon.
I'll hang that up if you want to quickly.
Okay, Amanda?
Okay.
Do you all want to join us?
Thank you, Carl.
Thank you. Good, thank you for being patient. By saying that, you know, you all realize that, you know, so much of what we deal with as far as whether it's energy or stormwater or sustainability are very, like, kind of cost-cutting and multifaceted issues. And county government, you know, historically hasn't really been set up to deal with those issues. And requires a lot of coordination across departments and a lot of different people. And I think that, you know, we've done a lot of really good work in the county government, and a lot of that reflects really right back to the county executive and the administration, the department, really with this charge to kind of tackle these problems from all the different angles, to bring the teams of people together. And, you know, you have now, since the department's kind of getting into this, you know, the Department of Environment program happened to come back in 2008, so now we're kind of hitting the sky, and it's really been this this coordinating model that has been brought on to tackle these problems, along with the support from the executive, because we don't carry a lot of, you know, the department itself doesn't have any enforcement authority, you know, we're kind of, we're doing this through this coordinating model, and it really is this, it really goes back to this epic through the whole kind of government right now, tackling these issues and the support from the executive office. So what I brought is kind of two things to share with you. The first is a guide which we published last January, and I don't know if folks are familiar with this.
We're not allowed to see these moments.
And I have more copies with me today. But what this is really just, it's a compendium. It's not a new policy manual or anything like that, but it's really meant to capture a lot of the different initiatives, whether they're policies or local laws or procedures, that can be different or in the county. It's in old group. To give you a starting point or a reference, because a lot of times, you know, in conversations with different people, they don't really realize kind of the breadth of activities and the breadth of law and procedures that we have. So, the guide identifies three sections, one on green purchasing, one on energy use and protection, and one on eliminating or reducing potential costs of business.
But this is a really good starting point of knowing what the legislature and executive office has taken on and what we all are doing. So I think that's always a good part, starting point for thinking about opportunities for improvement is knowing kind of where we are on a lot of the things. It's available online. There are some more. We don't print a lot of copies of these, but if you would like more kind of copies, please let me know. Oh, absolutely. And I have more.
I've
never seen it. Maybe it was in an email or something.
Yeah. Very good.
Purse
dust in the recorder.
You want an updated chart on the main vehicle guide? It's 6 years old.
First of all, I'll go through kind of the comments from our community and information that I have to share with you, and then we can drill down into that. So beyond the guide, which is, this is really a snapshot, and, we do file an annual report every year that, and we have an environmental plan that's available, that there's been a lot of different work, in the Department of Environment tackles issues from stormwater to natural resource issues to energy and sustainability and buildings, all working with different departments across the county. We have been working working on different elements with kind of smart communities through different work that we've been doing. This is an updated report card from climate smart communities. Each climate smart community, for most of them, there's a regional website where many of the climate smart communities have these kind of profiles that are available. And we've been working with the technical consultant to measure them, who's a consulting firm at an office called BHD that does a lot of sustainability consulting. And they also provide basically free technical assistance to the county to work on different elements of the project that we want to work on through the that kind of line up with the climate for our community. Which in many ways is lines up with a lot of what we're doing anyway. The stormwater, different energy conservation measures. There's a lot that's been ongoing for a long time that also kind of falls under the umbrella of the climate for our community. Is BHD paid to provide that service by Natural through with Reggie Funding?
Okay.
Because they also do a lot of the work on them. They have been, I'm sure, for some of them. They did a really good job. It's a little frosty. It's kind of you're really getting access to a top-notch consultant working with them. So there's a lot of different aspects in here. I counted 30 plus different actions that we've listed as a Climate Smart Communities Fund 23, which has been completed. But just wanted to highlight a couple because I think it kind of gives you a flavor of the that's some breadth of what we've been working on. We have completed, and this falls under Pledge Element 2, a greenhouse gas inventory for government operations. We did this in conjunction with CHB last summer. We used 2012 as the baseline year because that was last summer. That was our whole calendar year that we had to work with.
we're hoping to work with DHC, but now to create like a two-page nice glossy summary of that. Right now that information is available. There's many spreadsheets and a lot of data that's behind that greenhouse gas inventory. So that has been done. It's a pretty big undertaking, so we were pretty satisfied, pretty happy to have that done and have the support looking over our shoulder to do that. There's also been energy audits, a comprehensive energy audit of the county buildings. Those were completed in 2010 by Siemens. That work was funded 50% through the Energy Efficiency and Conservation Block Grant, which was a stimulus-funded block grant that the county received, and also 50% through NYSERDA. And there's over 108 different recommendations for energy conservation measures in buildings. It gets down to equipment in boiler rooms and insulation and windows that runs the gamut.
And where are we with implementing those 108 suggestions?
We've, I think, done some work on the low-hanging fruit, which includes like the upgrading of interior lighting. We've been looking at ways, low-cost or no-cost improvements. Now that I think we have shifted and kind of reorganized the county portfolio of buildings,
mm-hmm.
now, it's kind of a logical time to revisit some of that, now that we're kind of settling mm-hmm. into a new kind of
space.
Yeah. So it's a good time to do that.
Did that include the energy audit of buildings? Did it include the law enforcement center?
Yes, it did.
I would love to see those 108 suggestions here. I mean, is that available?
And I think it's a very big report. I know we have hard copies of it around. We can probably place the hard copy somewhere. The digital copy, have it somewhere on PDF. We can also burn it through. You have to email it in chunks.
I would love to look at the hard copy, borrow it. I mean, they're not trying to deal with my data, but yeah, start with that. Yeah,
that's emailable.
Okay.
When you get into some of the supporting.
Yeah, documents. I know.
And we've been looking for other ways, that don't require a lot of, like I said, the low-hanging fruit, no-cost improvement. So we worked with Central Hudson. We did an interior lighting upgrade. We also used some of the energy efficiency and conservation block grant money to do other upgrades. We have been also tracking using a utility track, which is also called facility dues, which is kind of a premium. In order to track our consumption. So then that's done, we're not just paying our bills, we also have a way to look at normalized data year to year, what the usage is on buildings, what the cost is for buildings, and it's very easy to pull up reports. And
that's great.
Use that data. We have the solar installation at the fairgrounds. We're also going to be working with the EPA to do some feasibility of a larger scale solar installation, whether it's at a landfill or another suitable site. So instead of having vendors come in and kind of look at sites and whether or not they would want to do a solar installation, we can have a pretty good feasibility study done by the EPA, so that they're looking at angle of, especially with the landfill, they're looking at aspects, they're looking at different engineering consideration of the landfill itself or the site, so that we have a really good sense of what we have
mm-hmm.
before we go out to look for if we can find some way to do some additional solar work. We know very well about the recycling and what our current's doing, but there's some interest right now in looking at the feasibility of composting from different kinds of shelters, particularly the jail, when you consider the meals and the amount of organic waste that's at that facility, and looking for maybe some way to get that over to Flatbush instead of having that hauled off.
also there's some really neat stuff going on with both in the parking lot here and with 50 Cent. In the parking lot, and you might notice the construction between 1 Crow and 17th Crow in the back of the lot, and that is the installation of a bioretention planter, which will mitigate stormwater runoff from the parking lot, which cools rather significantly before going into Crow Street and out into the storm sewer. That project is funded by a grant through the Hudson River Estuary Project. And it should be done in a couple of weeks, and that would be great. Also, for Sophie Finn, on a smaller scale, we're looking at ways to integrate electric vehicles, EV, charging stations into the work at Sophie Finn, so to integrate that into site design so that that's all ready. Now's the time to run the conduit while we're doing construction and making sure that that's set up.
And I heard that there was going to be a couple bills.
We're working on that too, actually. There's some that I haven't talked to NYSERDA about different funding opportunities, and we're hearing more about that.
Quarter of
the
water.
The bigger kind of work also at Sophie Finn is that we applied for and we're funded $439,000 green innovation grant from the Environmental Facilities Corporation for stormwater green infrastructure improvements to Sophie Finn. That is, it's really, you know, because it's, you know, a good project when you really see it, and this one was really good right there for it, because you have not only you are integrating the curriculum and the continuing education work that they do through the college on green infrastructure and sustainable design, and you're going to be incorporating all these aspects into the site design so that there's a living, demonstrable practices for them to look at on the site. But you're also in what's called the Hasbrook Stewardship for the city of Kingston. So this is the area with the most combined sewer overflows in Kingston town any given year. So literally, when it rains there, the rainwater goes into the stormwater system, and that is displacing that amount, that volume of untreated septic and stormwater into the groundwater. So any water that you can keep on site, that you can encourage to infiltrate and keep out of the storm system, is actually going to be displacing that amount of raw, untreated base and going into the roundup. There's something like...
Keisha, we're mad at the DEP. we're sewering up there in the city of Kingston, putting more sewer in.
On average, overflows from the half of the city shed into the roundup
annually
and every year. So literally every time it rains, that water is being displaced.
Oh,
wow. So, anything you can do to keep the water on site, and as well as, providing this really great educational opportunity by grooming this campus and showing appropriate pavement and rain gardens and aisle swales and a green wall, it's just a great project.
And this is a very similar community that we're working on a similar project in Newburgh, and I just today researched, the best projects around the country, and invariably using green stormwater practices is the most cost-effective. It is the low-hanging fruit, because all of these cities are going to have to address their combined sewer overflow problems, and if not, they're going to be staying time. I'd rather put it into infrastructure, and eventually the EPA is going to get around to actually large enforcement. It also creates green jobs. To do one school doesn't do it, but to do the city of Kingston, the more I've in places where it's appropriate, it really has a lot of potential. Green stormwater infrastructure and energy are probably the two biggest growth areas for job creation, solar and So we're thermal and energy efficiency. We're building all of that. Those are the two areas that I can see that really can help, particularly the underemployed.
So we're very excited about it. I'm hoping that we'll see that kind of work in the city of Kingston. And as you know, you start to look at the hospital campus and the high school campus that's going to be significantly renovated, they realize that this is a way to not only improve the walkability, improve the aesthetics of the site, but also get some of the drainage issues and also help the city of Kingston with their infrastructure. The other project that shows up in a couple of different groups in this profile is a project that we were involved with. The state received, the New York State DC received some funding from the EPA Healthy Watersheds Initiative to produce a guidebook for New York State calls of evaluating and conserving green infrastructure across the landscape. And this is landscape scale green infrastructure. So instead of thinking about a site and stormwater and catch basins and major water storms, this is thinking about more systematically about how forests and wetlands and different natural assets work to preserve the resiliency and the sustainability of the natural environment before you drill down to an engineering point. Orson County was selected as putting out a proposal to be used as a case study for New York State in this guide, and we were selected. We worked with the Green Infrastructure Center over about a period of 10 months. On this, and so the chapter 5, which is the mapping exercise for the county, goes through the process that we went through in Ulster County in order to identify more significant habitat corridors across the landscape. So these are areas that are unfragmented, they don't have train tracks or roads or other features in them. And then we looked at all the different biodiversity data that was available to kind of rank those core areas, which ones had more diverse species or support different kinds of wildlife. You know, this is kind of the one piece. This is the kind of the green print of the county. It's kind of interesting, most of the areas that are more developed that we make more sense to develop fall outside of these areas. So it's really a tool that's meant to be used in conjunction with other planning tools to think about prioritization of both development areas and conservation areas so that you're seeing that whole landscape when you go to make some of these decisions. It was very beneficial for us because we got to work directly with the Green Infrastructure Center to create some models for the county. I have copies of this on CD. This isn't available online, but I have a stack of CDs if you're interested in it. But we are working on not only getting the significant habitat cores data there online, but getting it online in kind of a new mapper tool, kind of similar to the brand new version of the parcel view. I don't know if folks have had a chance to see that yet.
Oh, on the GIS site? I always hit the button, like the plus button, and it takes it too big, and then my computer can't, then I got to go to another website and come back.
Within the last couple of weeks, and it has more,
right around in the time I was on it. I always hit the wrong button.
Like the recreation mapper, which is
when
a lot.
I don't know if I'm on the right.
One of the problems with the old one is that I had to redraw the entire map, but it didn't take it took forever.
So it's the master cache at different scales, okay. And it doesn't have to
and that just happened. Because yeah, I was talking maybe literally a month ago, 2 weeks ago, and I was like, this guy's nuts.
It's
got to be an easier way.
It's never really that.
He and I heard it was a
similar
month ago.
But we're hoping a version of that.
And as you get closer, you get
that provides a lot of this data that would become a natural resource inventory for our community. Also hosting the different towns, have so many biodiversity data, they have that.
That way they can look at that with the cores. They can look at different scales, the town scale and then the county scale and then, you know, regional data sets. So they can see how all these things interrelate when they're trying to do their analysis.
I'm not quite following how that connects with brain infrastructure.
It goes back to some of the definitions, the first definitions of green infrastructure around 15, 20 years ago,
before it was synonymous along
with stormwater infrastructure
by low impact development.
Got it. Wonderful.
Yes.
Yeah. See, what goes around comes
around. Yeah, of course. Hey, Amanda, do we still do as, the neighbor notification?
You know, to be honest, I get maybe one phone call a year about that. It does go through the health department. Sometimes they're misdirected if they come
through. Well, I'm just wondering if somebody new comes into the business, do they know if they apply for a permit with county, do they know the law?
Yeah, I was wondering since I didn't see it in this one in the past scam, I didn't see it in here. It seems like something that would at least potentially lower exposure because neighbors, if they were notified, could choose to not be home that day or close their windows or whatever.
Right.
And so my wife was going to say that. I was like, well, I wonder if it's still
We did have, and it's included in the sustainability guide in 2008, we did a kind of analysis on fuel efficient vehicles. And that has been a question we need to update about that. So we'll send around updates.
Can we vote on 151 and 152 right now?
What?
Let's vote on 151 and 152 right now.
Okay.
I'm sure you know, so we want to get it done.
Oh. There's a lot of factors that are going. Vehicles is another good example of how cross-cutting and energy sustainability issues are for county government. So there's kind of there's the environmental angle of it. There's also the operations and the maintenance angle of it. The guidance memo that we adopted in 2008, what we really done in that memo was kind of provide some points that we thought should be considered when vehicle purchases are reviewed. The one being not just the cost of the vehicle, but the cost of the fuel. And so we had done an analysis on that using some assumptions, which I'm sure vary quite a bit. $4 a gallon for gasoline, because we didn't really know what would happen with gas prices. And also that a vehicle, any given vehicle is driven about 10,000 miles a year, which may be lower to some, or really still too high for other kinds of vehicles. Again, so you're considering the kind of life cycle cost of the fuel in the cost of the purchase.
Is 5 years, you use 5 years as a model, is that, I mean, what do we see in our county vehicles?
I think
we
see them
longer.
Until
the end of
their life.
Because that's one thing that struck me when you sent this. Sure. I started to think beyond just having heard what Nana pays for her vehicle, which is not on the bid list, but you know, it's a Prius electric, the plug-in. And Nana shared with us that when she does plug it in, she gets 100 miles per gallon, and when it's not plugged in, it's 50 miles per gallon, which I drive a Prius, but not an electric one. But I think if you were to put in her purchase price for that and extend it, well, it might even work on the five-year thing to be among the cheapest, but if you were to extend it to 8-10 years, these would change. And that's something I definitely would want to see.
Double the light green.
Yeah.
You know, basically across the board.
Because for me, it's not just about, I mean, and Ken heard some of this conversation, I'm sure it's the same for Nana. The idea of a policy is something we've talked about, which is one of the reasons we want to do here, too. It's there are benefits, and you know better than most, that there are benefits beyond just the price. I mean, there's certain legislators and people who are going to just look at the bottom line price, period, purchase price, done. But it, when you're talking about the environment, the benefits
and
are beyond just cost.
You know, and there's also another piece of this which has to be, you know, we don't own any hybrid or plug-in vehicles right now. There's going to be also some cost in making sure that we have the equipment to service them and any training that we have to train our mechanics and our workers to work on that. Buses. The bus mechanics are separate from the central service mechanics.
Mm-hmm.
So it's another consideration that doesn't show up in this.
It could impact, people's jobs eventually. It might be more cost efficient for us to have certain vehicle service at a garage versus having an office.
I'd be curious what... it raises an interesting point because I obviously don't service my own hybrid. I bring it in, but I don't know what equipment they use that's different. I do know that all the fears that I've heard about for all these years, the first hybrid we bought was in 96, 95, something like that, and all that since that time, always people, sort of non-believers, would talk about the battery dying, and I have a car with 180,000 miles, I'm not the one to drive, but it's a hybrid that the battery never died. I don't think that's a common problem, but I don't know what equipment is different, so it'd be important to look into that for sure. It's an excellent point.
Right, it's a good opportunity to visit this issue. We have to, in all honesty, due to the county's fiscal circumstances, we have to purchase cars.
Mm-hmm.
Our fleet is very old for aging, and I think the purchases that you had seen recently were just out of absolute necessity.
You look
to see how we structure the vehicle purchases, as we tend to have a pool of vehicles, if you will, in the county. But when we're buying the new vehicles through the Department of Services reimbursement streams that we have, we can try to maximize as much reimbursement as we can. So really, all the new vehicles are going to the Department of Social Services. Their older vehicles are going in the pool and going to the department, so that's how we're really managing the fleet. A lot of
right.
on very low reimbursement and having the lowest impact to the tax levy as we can. The last round of you saw, again, out of Astros, so
right.
I think we're totally open to talking about how to look at the purchases, look at them in a way that not only is sensitive to the taxpayer, but also sensitive to the environment.
Right.
And I think that we're open to it. I know that looking at the state bid, I know that we've had some internal conversation about, when we're going to place orders on the state bid and when that's done. The way that we structure that right now is if we miss a cycle, so we may want to look at doing that capital piece, in August.
Right.
We know what we're going to buy and we can place our order and fit that better, but yeah, so I think we're open to all of
that. And talking about a vehicle like Nana, the plug-in, we would have to, in addition to the changes in terms of the mechanics of it and the maintenance of it, we would need to look into obviously charging stations. That's something that's very exciting to me. I think it's really thrilling.
The director of the environment driving around the 1980s.
I might point out too the Climate Smart Committee stuff in there as an element for installing electric charging stations in county facilities. So it's already part of that. But another thing is, correct me if I'm wrong, Tim, but I don't think it's a requirement that we purchase vehicles that are on the state contract. And we could, or if we thought we wanted something unique and especially valuable from an environmental point of view, go out and seek multiple bids for it.
That's right. Because the volume, the price
that's
about to be. But again, I think that we're open to talking about doing a pilot, taking something in, and just getting recognizing that.
Right. But if they're not advanced enough, to have plug-in electric vehicles.
There are some hybrids on
there. It's not very practical for, because I don't want to hang out at the same time while the vehicle charging.
Is that what it is?
Another thing I like about the idea of a pilot program with charging stations is then again you have the circumstances, not just for the benefit of our own vehicles, but of the county setting an example for residents, you know, and saying, look, this is the future. I mean, I go into the city quite a bit for work, and very recently, I mean, within the last, I see it more and more in the last 6 months, but within the last year, almost every parking lot I ever park in now, spots that are reserved for charging. And I've seen, like, the, you know, the fanciest of cars, cars that came out of that, what is that, the Tesla, you know, charging.
Do they charge for that?
Yeah, they do. In some they don't, but in a lot of them they do, but it's, you know, it's a nominal fee.
Well, the new capacity zone, they need to, you know.
I've been calling it $1.70 a day for a charge, and I get 12 miles. It doesn't use up all the 12 miles at once, but for the plug-in, for the electric vehicle part of it, it's 12 miles mixed in there.
Right. Wait, what do you mean, Amanda, 12 miles mixed in? What do you mean, 12 miles? You get 12 miles on a charge?
On a charge, but they don't. You don't use up to 12 miles all at once because the computer shifts it into, sometimes it's using the hybrid battery, sometimes it's using the electric vehicle battery. I mean, it favors the electric vehicle battery when that charge is there. In some days, I'm able to actually charge it twice. Okay, so that's $3.40 if what they told me is true. And everything they told me, I haven't done the calculation on that, and I don't think I've gotten a Central Hudson bill. I think it'll be...
There are additional considerations because the size of the battery is different from the Prius versus the Chevy Bolt versus the C-Max plug-in. The C-Max will go 22 miles on a charge. The Chevy Bolt will go 32 miles on a charge.
I didn't know the Prius was only 12 miles on a charge, but it's a
smaller battery.
Yeah.
That would be great. I would be very interested. What do you think
of the round of amazing?
Thank you, Amanda.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, it's solving that psychic problem.
I remember seeing a list. It was like 320 and 340.
Because we saved a lot of cars.
Right.
And let's be honest, like, the county is a lot, county employees are a lot less than they were just 5 years ago.
So the lot we
approved is really not of great significance. No, and again, but you also have to, again, separate out the sheriff's department from the rest of the operation.
You're not going to run the sheriff's department on the Prius.
No, and in honesty, in a lot of the vehicles we use at social services are minivans, and again, some of the cars that you want to buy are appropriate, you know, for that. Okay, so, again, I think it's looking at the different tasks, looking at resources for vehicles. Again,
we'll have to make
pilots. It might be a little bit of extra expense, but we're looking to measure some very specific things as part of that as well. And I don't really want to buy a Prius and, you know, set it up in the mountains, you know, 5 days a week. It's not going to be, that's not really the most efficient thing either, so. I think that would be good. I'd like to have that room and have two folks there and then brainstorm that.
Great.
Well, that's great. I do, so, you know, that's where the cost efficiency really is. We have sanitariums going to restaurants all over the place. I mean, again, you know, I don't know if the rest of the
Every time I come to the county building, it's almost a 60-mile round trip.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You know about it.
Yeah,
exactly. Okay, thank you. Thank
you.
You
should come here.
Okay. For that subcommittee, obviously, can only be two from this committee. So, I know I would be very interested. I assume Anna.
Sorry.
Would you be very interested? So let me talk to Mary and see where Mary is.
I'm good with that.
If I have to talk Mary into it, I'll talk her into it if you need a third person.
Well, we can't. Or we'd be the committee.
I'll tell you what, Ben. I will, on behalf of Mary, I will say, pretty as a boy.
I don't want to create, but, yeah. Okay. Moving on. So, yeah, I would...
I'll move Resolution 151.
Okay. Can we, before you leave, Amanda, can I have one too and can you leave with Chris?
If I could, I might as well say aloud to Amanda. So we're close to forming a countywide.
Oh, yeah.
Climate Smart Committee that was approved a long time ago, and actually we're looking for a business person.
That's all. The rest of the committee's been appointed, so it's just the business, a member of the business community. We're still looking for. We had a candidate.
Couldn't do it. Right?
Is it supposed to be like a green energy business, or
it doesn't have to be.
Oh, okay.
So someone who's open to, I mean, to open to green. So I think, you know, we should put it out to the committee to think, or to anyone.
I would think that Anthony Sicari in Gardner,
the green.
Let Solar Pay You or whatever, New York Solar Farm.
Yeah, it's worth talking to. Who's it?
Anthony Sicari.
Possibility. Sure.
Yeah. Just thinking that in the solar business, he'd be interested.
Okay. And we were looking at geographic diversity, too.
Yeah.
I'll see if I can remember for it.
The voting numbers that are specified in the resolution, but to do what we did years ago with the way we were able to make so much progress with recycling, was to bring all representatives from all of the towns to be part of those discussions.
I'm
hoping we'll be able to accomplish
I'm going to be quiet about it. Fair enough.
What do they call it? Ex officio or honorary?
Not silent, but
thank you.
Okay.
So moving on with resolutions. First resolution number 151, confirming appointment of a member to the Ulster County Resource Recovery Agency.
I'll move it.
Mr. O'Brien.
For the purposes of this, can we just take them both together, or do you want to vote on them both separately?
We can put them together. You want to vote on both of them?
Yes.
Okay. I'll do whichever you prefer.
I wasn't going to say no twice.
Okay. So, 151, Charles Landy.
You don't have a second.
A second now? A second? Yes. Okay, discussion?
As I have put forth a couple of times, I believe wholeheartedly that when you read the public authority law as it pertains to the RRA, that section 2050 paragraph C clearly says subsection C first paragraph says that vacancies on the board will be filled by the manner of original appointment, which to me says if a, you know, being that there are four majority and one minority choices, that when the minority one that was originally the minority member comes up, it's again a minority appointment. I don't ascribe to the same belief that because now when the Republicans were in the majority, there were, you know, we had the four appointments and the Democrats were in the minority and had the one appointment. I don't now consider the four that are on there minority appointments because the legislature flipped. So for that reason, and for not being able to denote which one, either Mr. Landy, who I really wish I could vote for because I like him as a member, and Mr. Gordon, I don't know which one would have been the minority appointment because of the way that they're being appointed now, so I feel like I have to vote against both of them. So.
I don't want to finish a whole long debate either, but you know that I respectfully disagree.
Yep.
Based on the public authorities law, it says they're not actually minority or majority appointments, they're chair's appointments, but one must be recommended
by the minority leader.
And you know, my argument and my belief is that currently we have four sitting. We have a difference of opinion in terms of majority, because of what's the currently at four sitting that were recommended by the now.
But they're majority at the point at the time.
But they are now minority. So, is there any more discussion?
Just so everybody's aware, I don't want to make the meeting go longer because everyone's going to go ahead and have a vote. But I did write a letter to John, you know, asking that by the section of public authorities law that he appoint a gentleman that we would have appointed had we been afforded one of the two picks. And then he wrote me a letter back, so I think that both of those wound up being on file with the minutes.
Okay.
So.
Thank you.
And was that, who was the appointment?
It was Scott Carlson from the town of Worthing.
Is our people still...
No, he's off now. He's being replaced by Mr. Gordon, or Mr. Lynn. I guess they mind Mr. Gordon.
Okay. I did speak to Al Tito on the phone. He called me about the process. I talked to him from my perspective. I also let him know that another appointment is going to be coming on in a very short time. And,
6 months from another appointment.
Yeah. And if he's still interested, I told him, and which he assured me he would be, that they'd be part of whatever interview process we have, which I think we are going to have to revisit this, not tomorrow, but very, very quickly we're going to have to revisit this whole concept.
And I just want, for the record, because I don't want it to seem, because I'm saying, that our caucus had requested that Mr. Carlson be appointed, I don't want to let that cast a shadow on Mr. Kiesel, because, we definitely would have considered reappointing him, but when you look at the RRA board as it's currently constituted before I make these appointments, it's two from Saugerties and two from Kingston, and then Leon Smith is the only person from south of Kingston. And we were looking for some geographic diversity, and if we would have, and I feel like, our argument would have had less weight that, we should have this appointment and it should be out people. I feel like that would have held less weight because one of the ideas of having the board is to have some geographic diversity on the board. And we did not have that in the last one.
This is your fourth. This is my last.
I'm done. Forget it.
Okay. All in favor of resolution number 151?
Aye. Opposed?
Why? Okay. Resolution number 152, confirming appointment of a member to the Ulster County Resource Recovery Agency. Gordon.
Aye.
Yeah, do you want a second?
Yes.
Okay. Any discussion?
Now, since Rich wanted to do this twice, I figure I'll just make all my points again. All my last points.
Okay.
Everything I just said.
Okay, Jimmy.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Aye.
Okay. Resolution number 160, setting a public hearing on proposed local law number 4, 2014, the local law amending.
I'll move it.
Okay.
No move yet.
Okay. Okay, second?
I'll second.
Okay. So this,
this we discussed before Steve Noble came to our meeting, and I think Steve Noble addressed the issue of attendance and kind of an informal poll at that meeting. We decided to bring it forward, and this again, because of, for those who remember, because of the legal limits in terms of having to put it back to the voters, we can't fix the 2 to 3 year term issue. But what our attorneys and the county attorney agreed is that we could amend the resolution to remove the term limits, which will become an issue very quickly if we don't do it.
So I'll move it. I'll move it.
Any other discussion? Okay. Resolution number 156, authorizing the chairman of the Elkhorn Chamber of Legislature to execute a contract with the New York State Department of State for funding to conduct the Brownfield Opportunity Area Study Step 1, amending the 2014-2019 capital program and establishing capital project number 409, Brownfield Opportunity Area Study Department of Planning. You want to join us at the table, Dennis? Okay.
I'll move it.
Okay,
a second?
Okay. Thank you. Okay,
Dennis,
do you want it? You did
it all this time.
I feel like you must be
if there's a meeting. No, but if there are questions, I'd be happy to answer. It is a step one grant, which is a more of a planning grant than an identification grant. It's countywide. The idea would be to look at clusters of brownfields and underutilized sites, and then move to a step two, which is the nomination, and then do that necessary study, and finally the implementation. These kinds of grants take about 4 years to move from point A to point B. The reason for them is that you're eligible for a lot more funding when you get through the process. And B, you tend to do a lot of discovery, and it's more of a planning exercise at this particular point in time, and communities start to think about those areas that are underutilized in a community, which may be underutilized, not because of brownfields, but for other reasons. Older buildings is an example of that, that come into play.
Are there any target areas?
Not at this point in time. That would be the point of the study, to actually establish those clusters and make them proper target areas, and they would become brownfield opportunity areas. Given the funding and the size of the county, we would anticipate that we would start looking in obviously urbanized areas and move out from there and then see where we find clusters and make those clusters target areas.
So is it with an eye toward getting grant funds to clean them up? Is that what we're...
Eventually. The answer is yes, eventually. It's also with an eye for what's precluding some of these areas from being developed. And there may not be brownfield. There may be other reasons for them not being developed, but they're underutilized. Maybe zoning, for example, could be one of the reasons.
It's part of the, under the study, are you required to be pointing to the conclusion that it's because of the bigger ground?
That's a good question, Ken. I think when you look at that, the answer would be is we won't know what's there. We'll just know that the sites are underutilized. But in some instances, we may know because of the history report. In other instances, we won't.
So if we're doing it for the purpose of potentially getting them cleaned up so they can be developed, then in order to get the funding for it, would it be required to have that funding to show that it's environmental status is holding them back?
No, I think the requirement is just the sites are underutilized. And if there are known environmental problems, then you would know that, but the sites are underutilized. And then you would go in and do the nomination work and then do what's there, so sort of what's there process.
Okay.
And this is obviously with willing landowners. It's always difficult in some of the brownfield issues because
if it's identified and you don't get them ready to clean it up, then the landowner has more.
Well, even if it is identified, some of the landowners don't want you digging any further. So there are issues associated with this as we move forward, and you have to be sensitive to those issues, and we will.
And you expect the completion of the study, would that be December 31st, 2015? Is that how long this phase is going to take?
It will be a challenge. because once you go through procurement and start the work, it's going to be a challenge to finish. And we're dealing with the Department of State, who is, I guess the easiest way to put it, is like to watch everything you do over your shoulder, and that also holds things back. You know, this is something that came out of the original Stand Development Corporation. We were asked to take it on. And we looked at it and with some trepidation said we would. And we think that there is really some merit here in a lot of instances to get the work done.
Yeah, it's great.
And it's set up in a capital project, so Amanda and I are having an interesting discussion about who wants to lead it. It's not set up in my body or
anything. Are you pointing this way or this way?
I think that's what we're doing. It's just, you know, it's one of us, theirs kind of stuff. But yeah, I think that's what we're doing. I think it's cooperative, so that the tide is coming out of both departments' staff.
Great.
Oh.
We didn't leave. So, is there any more discussion?
Oh, we
didn't.
No.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Thanks
very much
for coming. Thank you. You always explain things. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. If you want, I don't know if everyone's other evolution, there's a couple of things I could cover if you'd like. One thing is that about a month ago, the legislature passed another capital project relative to acting as fiscal agent for a technical consultant and for the Show Cameron's working group. We've moved through that process. We've chosen a technical consultant. We're writing that contract now for the phase one, which is comments on the draft scope of the EIS. Amanda and I attended a public scoping session last night. Some really good comments with respect to that public scoping session. That's one. Two is just as a point of information in terms of vehicle charging stations. NYSERDA is actually putting in for something called a Tiger Grant, which comes out of transit. Transportation is interesting. When you look at greenhouse gas emissions, transportation is about 70%, between 60-70% of your greenhouse gas comes through transportation. Milton County Transportation Council has been involved in terms of looking at sustainability of greenhouse gas emissions on a lot of different levels. Number one has to do with the hybrid buses. Number two has to do with congestion management for park and ride facilities. We fund park and ride facilities. At a county level. But NYSERDA, the Tiger Grant for NYSERDA, is actually a statewide charging station installation program. The second thing I want to talk about is that we've actually been working with some of the municipalities with respect to private parking lots. We've been working with the town of New Paltz to develop a amendment to the zoning statute, which requires that if you have a private parking lot with more than 10 spaces, one out of every 10 spaces will be a charging facility. And the planning board can waive that, but the waiver would still require the installation of the necessary conduit so it can be put in place in the future.
Wow.
So the approval of the parking lot and the site plan would actually require.
How is it broken down? Sorry. Handicapped accessible or not handicapped?
Well, there's the wall for handicapped accessible is in the statutes and the building code, so you have to have handicapped accessible.
So have a non-charging car and part of the charging station.
Yeah, I don't know whether there's a handicapped accessible.
Is that one of the 10? Oh, they're private.
They're private.
Well, restaurants are private.
Yeah, they're private.
That's an excellent question.
My good solution would be to put them next to all the parking lots. That would be the good solution. I just want to let you know that there's been a concerted effort to do that. And on the other side, there's also been a concerted effort on the housing program side to take a look at housing. A lot of the very poor people are making choices between heating and eating. The thought would be is essentially to some of our housing rehab programs are now looking at energy efficiency work. The legislature did approve a housing program, which we're now implementing in 2012, that's the agenda, so you should be aware of that. We are continuing to take a look at the energy the rate capacity zone. And the Public Service Commission did announce a new vision for electric and energy use. Part of it has to do with the statewide plan, so we are involved in that as well. And there's a
whole host of other things that I know the site plan will hold you up that we're currently involved in, but we are taking a look at some of the other things we're looking at is some of the bridge technology that's out there for the county to use. We're also completing a study of an intermodal center in New Paltz, and we're beginning some studies on a long-range transportation plan that's due to be adopted by September of next year for the Transportation Council. The new transportation bill, MAP 21, and its successor, which is going to hopefully be in existence by the end of September when the new federal fiscal year starts, is going to have a great deal to say about energy and energy efficiency. And it's also going to change the way I think that federal infrastructure projects are financed. They're now financed by gas tax. It's not worth financing anymore. So you're going to see that change over. We continue to take a look at the transport by train of fuel oil. There is a pipeline that goes in and out for Ulster County. Wonderful.
What's wrong with that?
Go through Marlboro Highland.
Thruway, runs down the Thruway. Yeah. We may be asking New York State DEC to take lead agency status rather than the New York State Thruway Authority. The Thruway Authority is an appropriate agency to be looking at this. And we do have some concerns, as much as the cruise is coming back, there's distillates coming, there's two pipe distillates.
Yep.
So cruise coming down, distillates coming back up, but we have some concerns about the distillates coming back up because of their exposure nature. Clearly, if the cruise not exposed, certainly the distillates are. And the other thing that we continue to look at and work with is the Ulster County Resource Recovery Agency with respect to solar installation on their landfills. Since the net metering law went into effect, the county can actually be behind the meter for purchasing the power, even though the Resource Recovery Agency doesn't use a lot of power, we do.
At the town landfill.
Well, actually, at the
just one.
Yeah, we do recognize the fact, and that's a good thing you said. That we do recognize the fact that there is some. That's the easiest way to put it. There are some complications in that because of the way the landfills are controlled. The town could actually take them back and use them for their own net metering facility. But in that sense, it still helps in a general sense if we can get them involved in solar work.
So there's New Paltz and the town of Ulster?
That's the two big ones, yeah. New Paltz, the town of Ulster still has almost 21 acres. And we've met with Solar City, who is a mega choice. And we've looked at that.
Should look carefully at whether we want to do a power purchase agreement or...
We've been following some of the work from Woodstock.
Behind other states and counties.
We're so far behind.
When I
was up in Cape Cod, mm-hmm. and when you go 495 on the right-hand side of Massachusetts, there is literally 1 mile of solar panels on the side of the road. 1 mile, thousands of them. When you go to the Cape, all their towns have the windmills and solar panels. There's nothing around here. But you know, part of the problem is, look at Denning. Judd Hirsch wants to put a wind tower, and the town voted it down.
Yeah.
So we talk out of one side of the mouth, but yet our actions are from the other side. You know, I mean,
we can't stand financial output up front. I mean, can't be for the
purpose. No, but Trace, I don't want to go back and talk about sort of suspects, but here we are in the county talking about environmental and being energy, clean energy, and it's good stuff, but yet we make our trash that's being taken to Albany go an extra 300 or 400 miles out round trip. Did anybody do a study on that to see how many more, how that affected the environment?
Yeah.
No, because it was the almighty dollar in that case. So I get frustrated when, you know, it sounds good, but we should do it all the time, not just once in a while when it's convenient. And I'm not blaming you. That's not your fault.
Because it did come in front of the county planning board. It was a use variance because of the way the zoning statute is written. Mm-hmm.
And I'm not blaming you for that.
We actually made a recommendation back to the town in terms of model codes. There's a model code right next door in town and everything.
Mm-hmm.
We thought that they could move it and look at that model code as a way to move it towards approval. So sometimes communities deny things not because there's no legislative
stomach.
But they shut it down.
Yeah.
They shut it down. Imagine that a woman.
We had a lot of conversation with Mr.
It was Judd Hirsch.
Yeah. But Mr.
You know who his attorneys and planning people were? The folks from the biggest environmentalists. What's his name?
Mark Ruffalo.
No, he's up in. You know who he is? It's up in Olive Bridge, Chase. You know, Scarlett Chase.
Yes. Yeah.
And he was the guy that was. They were the guys on doing it. They got shot down.
So
the biggest environmentalist you'll ever meet in your life, and then
it was a small window.
So I laughed, you know.
40 feet high, so it wasn't a small window, and there was something.
Yeah, but they could put a cell tower on.
Yeah, we.
There were some issues associated with it, not the least of which is with the
It's like the Kennedys didn't want the windmills out in
there's certain with the issues that come up.
I don't know, I just get frustrated because people talk about it, but they don't actually follow through and live by it.
I have a question on working with the town, a piece of legislation that it sounds like you're trying to create, and I'm just wondering, does that then come to us? Yeah. What did you were talking about?
Parking lot?
That's
an amendment to the zoning statute. So we're looking at that statute and starting to have conversations with the city that you have to have. And the board does make
the planning board
does make specific recommendations, particularly to outdoor lighting, use of LED fixtures and others. We do make those recommendations.
Okay, right. Well, that's what I was just trying to figure out whether we were going to need to act on that or not.
No. Okay. We have, as part of our, if you go back and look at our referral guidelines, there's a whole set of referral guidelines dealing with energy and energy efficiency. And we work with applicants to try to make sure that that is the case.
Cool. Thank you so much. No, it's great.
Speaking of bombs.
Okay, so.
I'd like to take both of these together since they are relatively similar in nature. Is that
okay.
Cool?
Yeah, we can talk about the distinction.
Or do you want to hear the vote? Yes.
I don't want to hear that. So that was a motion. I have a question on that. Motion to block.
Where shall second it?
So all in favor of taking these two together? Aye. Okay. Do you want me to read it all out?
No.
Okay. So this is resolution number 156 and 183. But 184, that's meant to be 183, I meant 184. 184 is more specific to Ulster County and the beach of Ulster County, and 183 is there any discussion?
No, they get paid.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Our attorneys to be sure that it's in proper real language.
To Krista.
Copy Kristen, but he just asked that they could put it more in.
Okay.
The attorneys don't necessarily have.
Well, if you want to make an amendment, a friendly amendment on the floor, if you see something. No, I'm just saying now, but if you see something.
I guess what I would like to request is that the attorneys look at these two just from an. And I know that Kate is an attorney herself. If you want to, I don't think they need to. Okay. But it's up to you.
I'm still understanding the process.
And so I know when I wanted to make an amendment, I was told to talk to Chris with you.
I think it's funny. I mean, and this is me speaking out as chair of this committee, just as a legislator. I think that we get to a point where we tend to defer to attorneys. I mean, attorneys are people with opinions. And so, I mean, I know in years past I haven't drafted as much in legislation in this term, but
the legislation that we're talking about, I just drafted it. I didn't even show it to an attorney. Brought it in, and I think in some cases they're definitely an asset, and I'm grateful for their help. But these are moralizing resolutions.
Yeah.
It's something that you have a concern about.
Oh, go ahead.
If I have a concern, and I'll raise it, and...
Yeah, sometimes there's state or federal contracts. There's no wiggle room. You can't change an I to a maybe, a yes to a maybe, you just...
Okay.
There. But you know what? We used to have all of our resolutions, or at least before the executive, when it was 32 of us, used to say, every resolution said, end with the approval of the county attorney, which means if we were 33-0 and the county attorney said no, none of the resolutions got passed. Remember that? And Tracy and I were like, we're probably after 3 years of everyone, we're like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
I mean, here we could be 33-0 and some attorney can say, no, I'm not going forward with it.
Yeah.
So we had the language change.
Yeah, yeah.
Careful
about that.
Okay. All right. I just also want to think about,
do you think it's on any email us or Tracy or
financial impacts? Not that there's not a financial impact. For us to urging them to
just 38 cents.
Right.
In terms of the sheriff and stuff like that. I think this is really important.
Okay.
I have to say that over the last 4 years, I've heard all kinds of complaints about memorializing resolutions, and I feel like the last 2 months or 3 months have been more memorializing resolutions than I can remember since I've been on the legislature.
Yeah. There are a lot.
Who's going to have a lot? It was tough to beat two.
Yeah, but Ken wasn't here.
I just want to say that I followed up with that memorializing resolution.
Yeah.
To the greatest extent possible.
I don't want to seem like I'm, because I've always believed in memorializing resolutions, but other people haven't believed in memorializing resolutions.
A lot of attorneys don't allow them. Because they just feel it bogs down from the work we do. The work we can do. I've always felt, to me, a letter and signed by 10 or 15 people is no different than a memorializing resolution. It's the same.
I don't necessarily agree with that, but I've always believed that we should have a policy that the memorializing resolution have something that can be clearly drawn as germane to Ulster County business or Ulster County residents. We had one that was supporting the State Department's position on events and did that. That was my favorite one. We got a letter from the Dalai Lama. And before I was elected, there was one supporting the impeachment of President Bush. That was my favorite one.
Never went before.
Are you sure? I'm pretty sure of that.
I don't think it did.
I'm positive.
Okay.
It may not refer to committee. We send a lot of them out. I mean, to Barnesep, Cahill, Henchy, Gibson, whoever, Schumer, we send them all out. And I just, example recently is the train folks are sending a letter to us, getting 10, 20, 30 a day at one point during the year. I'll read them after a while.
Yeah.
And to me, it's no different for these guys. They're all Ulster County's got four more memorializing resolutions. And so some months we do 10. We have 8 and 10 some months. Do you really think they're reading them? I don't.
Well, and I think if there's something we can do beyond just, and I want to commend Central Hudson is taking the FERC to court because they haven't acted promptly on their appeal. That, as far as I'm concerned, our resolution had an impact.
But so did the legislators from Dutchess County that just wrote letters.
Yeah.
Who's had a bigger impact? There's ours.
Didn't Dutchess have a resolution as well?
I don't believe so.
They
had a resolution first?
Yeah.
And maybe it was Orange or a couple legislators that wrote letters. Because Orange County does not allow memorializing resolutions. Senator Bonnefet was the first chairman, and he wrote upright the charter. And he said memorializing resolutions, they just felt. And there's days we'll talk about a memorializing resolution for an hour, and then there'll be a bond for $6 million. Nobody will ask the question.
Yeah.
Yes, we did vote,
but I'm going to take the old business out of order, just to do a quick show. We already talked about climate to our committee. Everyone thinks about the employment. We'll look into if it's part of me and reach out to him. I want to talk about the oil treatment safety public forum first, since it comes right on these two resolutions. So, Kate Hudson will be making a presentation at session next week, a brief presentation, 10 minutes or less. And the idea and the hope is that at that presentation, she'll also be announcing a public forum, ideally which this committee would convene with the important, not really stakeholders, but the important people to answer the questions, which would be, as best I can identify at this point, would be, we would call CSX to invite them, would be Riverkeeper and any other environmental organization that made sense, the Sheriff's Department, Emergency Arsenal News, Emergency Communications, the EC Spill Response, and the Coast Guard. That's who I have identified now. Right. I don't know who else. We're shooting for the 27th.
Of May. Okay.
So it's a very fast turn. I'm not sure if we're going to be able to make it happen. The reason we want to make it happen that quickly is...
The evening?
To be in the evening.
I can't be here. Just that's where I was. That's okay.
I'll keep everyone posted. Maybe we'll have to move it to the change. You definitely
do. I'm out of court that night.
But if it is too tight, I'll coordinate with Kate and the committee to try to make it. The idea is that the end of public comment is June 3rd. I think it's important in terms of getting the awareness. I'm not really sure how many people are going to come to the session and write a letter before the end of the weekend. I just don't know how realistically. And the 27th is the day after Memorial Day observed. So it's a little tight, but I'll keep you all posted. I think it would be a very important thing. They did have a forum in Newburgh. I'll get you a second. It was more... from what I read, more of kind of what the presentation that Kate and Riverkeeper did for us, but for a larger audience, whereas I think this, we're looking for more of a give and take and an interaction, which is something that Riverkeepers had the opportunity to talk to a lot of these people, and one thing that was really alarming in talking to Kate was the idea that there really isn't an emergency plan in place. There isn't a way to handle a large spill. And I'm sure everyone here knows, since our meeting with Kate and Riverkeeper, there was another derailment which eerily showed pictures of the trains falling off the side of a steep embankment right into a river. Looked just like parts of the Hudson River.
Oh, I thought you were talking about an actual derailment
in Jersey,
on this line.
I was talking about an actual derailment, but not here.
Okay.
Yeah, Pennsylvania. Yeah. So, and there was even another one.
Down in Virginia somewhere.
Virginia. So this is really still very important.
Oh, absolutely.
That we discussed.
So. The point that I was going to bring up real quick is that Canadian Pacific was just, and Canadian Pacific runs the rail line Albany North, with the same oil trains,
right.
They were recently fined, the maximum was $5,000. I swear to God, honest to God, for a derailment that happened in Albany at the yard. Four cars went off the track, and Albany officials weren't notified for 4 hours or 5 hours. The rule is within an hour.
And even that, within an hour. Right.
Within 36, so you get to some point.
The maximum, I think that, I don't know if I heard that Senator Schumer or somebody had proposed legislation to raise the maximum fine to $25,000.
Still not much.
But $5,000 is like, that's laughable. Not even pocket change, it's the kind of money that's around in here.
Yeah. Okay, so I'll probably keep in touch by email, because in the next week we'll probably understand whether it's going to be extra or it's going to be pushed. But either way, we'll know before next Tuesday, because that's when she will be making a presentation one way or another. And then just to update, Ken Brunk and I attended a working session on the EIC, which included Ken Brunell, Don Gregorius,
chairman, myself, and Energize. I thought it went really well. I mean, there was this concern expressed
by
Ken and Ken.
Ken who?
Spinell and Ron.
Who sat next to each other.
Listen. Your votes can be worse than the votes for your RA.
So.
I'm going to know. That's all there is to it. What?
To the EIC?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, there's too many questions, not enough answers. And I mean, you know, they haven't done a deal. How can we put, I mean, you know.
Let's start somewhere.
Fair enough. I'd just rather not be the guinea pig.
Just to let the committee know, I think that the next step, you know, we'll talk to our individual caucuses. But I think the next step is to have a presentation for the full legislature, which I spoke to Vicki about, because the next caucus is at the college. That's probably going to be a tough day, and there's a couple other brief presentations, and then the college budget. So, it's too much. So it might be that we have to have an actual special session called to do this, to not cut into a meeting, because all the legislators...
A special meeting of this committee.
No, of the legislators, because the rest of the legislators deserve to hear the whole presentation. You can't just vote versus it. You don't want to just vote. I don't want
to. Discussion is going to be at the college?
No.
I'm confused.
Caucus is going to be at the college.
Correct.
So it would have made sense potentially to do a presentation at caucus, but next month that's not.
So
we might have to do a special informational session or the next caucus. The problem with the next caucus is it's July. I feel like July.
You got a problem if I don't come and hear the presentation the third time?
No. Although it might be worthwhile you coming to hear your concerns for real.
Fair
speech. So
I guess the guys heard them twice. Maybe by then he'll get to
Orange County will do something.
Oh no, maybe by then he'll be asked a third time to give us the letter from the state comptroller's office showing that it doesn't apply to the tax cap.
Okay, that I'll make sure.
Sorry, anyway.
No,
please.
Can you be a yes?
No.
Well, what do you care?
Yes, I still care.
But anyway, so you.
More of my office will be a no if we don't get that letter.
The next point, the next
step. Wait, on the what? $775,000 per.
The next step with this, though, is to have the whole legislature through the presentation. Because I really don't want people talking just going on it. Oh, whatever.
You know I'm always there for masochism, so.
Okay. So, and that's. Is there anything else?
Why are we meeting at the college, and when are we meeting?
Our next month's caucus is at the college, because that June is traditionally the month where the college presents its budget.
Since that's your district, you're not allowed to go.
Okay, so... anything else anyone wants to discuss?
We're raising tuition again.
Of course.
Like the 17 in a row.
What's for dinner? Sandwiches. No, thank you. Oh, tonight? Right now. Oh, right now. Oh, right now. I'll entertain a motion
to adjourn.
All
in favor? Second.
Okay. Okay. Okay.
Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Thank you, Chris.
It's a tear in my eye and soul in my heart. I'm going home.
I love watching the direction you're going, though, I gotta tell you.
I feel it's a third person.
Well, you were. But I'm fine.
I'm
going down to Senate.
Yeah, I really have
to. I don't know.